Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson, coming to you from my basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. I'm a homeschool father of five. Dave Buhner, also in studio with me, another homeschool dad of five. We've been together doing this program for about 9 or 10 years. During the demise of Western civilization, the breakdown of the American Republic, the breakdown of our social systems, the breakdown of economies, the breakdown of the Christian faith, all of these things have been breaking down steadily for a long, long time. But right now, we're pretty much on the fiscal cliff, the family cliff, the father cliff, the, you know, whatever cliff you want to say. Right now, America is disintegrating. This is what it looks like when an empire falls apart. And we like to chronicle this from time to time here in my basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado, because we're pretty positive about the second Mayflower. We're really positive about rebuilding civilizations based upon the principles of God's word. And there are a growing number of people around the world who are understanding that there's no way that this humanist, existentialistic, materialistic, live for today, die tomorrow, and leave your kids in all that debt, that kind of a worldview is probably not going to sustain civilizations and socioeconomic systems. All right, friends. Well, today we're going to comment on the fiscal cliff and what happened over the New Year's. Dave, I mean, this was an amazing deal. And we remember on the 31st program when we did the review on 2012 and we did a prognostications for 2013. Remember what we said? We said that 2012 was the year that the Republican Party collapsed. John Boehner collapsed. John Roberts collapsed. You know, all these people collapsed because there's no character left in the nation. But, you know, they were collapsing and that's exactly what happened over the New Year's. Here, Dave, here's the story. According to the CBO, this Congressional Budget Office, the last-minute fiscal cliff deal reached by congressional leaders and President Barack Obama cuts only $15 billion in spending, which, by the way, is just minuscule. I mean, we're talking like a fraction of a percent of what they had to deal with when it came to this mega deficit that they were dealing with. Anyway, they cut $15 billion in spending while increasing tax revenues by $620 billion. That's a 41-to-1 ratio of tax increases to spending cuts. And Dave, that's a record. Woohoo, that's a record. Okay, they raised taxes and cut almost nothing. The ratio, 41-to-1. And the cut itself, Dave, not exactly a cut in spending.
No,
I mean, as I think the average person is thinking, you know, if you've got a deficit in your household budget, you would cut spending, which would mean you'd have to be buying, you know, less.
Right. You got to learn Washington's.
You'd eat out less and all the rest.
In your household, if you were to make a cut in your grocery budget, say you were spending $500 a month in groceries, and you say that's just too much. We can't afford it. We need to make a cut. We're going to spend $450.
Right. That would be a cut.
That would be a $50 cut in your household. No, that's not a cut in government. Now, the government says we're spending $500. We were planning on spending $1,000. But we're going to go through a cut because $1,000 is too much and we can't afford the $500. So we're only going to spend $750 and we're going to save $250 a month.
Sort of like a thief breaking into your house and say, I'm going to lift the jewelry, then deciding to leave one cheap necklace. That would be a cut in thievery, I guess.
The rate of thievery.
The rate of thievery, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So instead of him taking all of your jewelry, he only took most of your jewelry.
Yeah,
this is government. This is how the government
operates. That's the way the government operates. Okay, friends, the ratio 41-to-1 on the spending cuts, which really wasn't a spending cut, versus tax revenue increases, $620 billion to $15 billion. It's a 41-to-1 ratio of tax increases to spending cuts, according to the CBO. When Presidents Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush increased taxes in return for spending cuts, remember, no new taxes, H.W. Bush, back in the early 90s, no new taxes. But when push came to shove, new taxes. But Dave, it was a ratio of 1-to-2. It was a ratio of 1-to-2. It's a ratio of spending cuts, taxes to spending cuts, a tax increase of 1 to a spending cut of 2. And now we've got a ratio of tax increases of 41 to spending cuts of 1. So, Dave, that's a significant difference between the 1-to-2, 1-to-3, and 41-to-1 under Barack Obama and the Republican Congress. My understanding is the Republicans still control Congress.
Right.
So they folded pretty significantly, way more than any Republican Congress has ever folded in the history of America. In 1982, President Reagan was promised $3 in spending cuts for every $1 in tax hikes. According to Americans for Tax Reform, the tax hikes went through, but the spending cuts did not materialize, which
Duh.
Typically what happens. President Reagan later said that signing onto this deal was the biggest mistake of his presidency.
Right. Never, so never cut in the future. Always cut in the present.
Right, right.
That's rule number one. If this was a battle, this is a massacre. This is Agincourt. You know, when you lose 41 of your soldiers to one of theirs, that's not winning.
That's a total rout.
That's a rout. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is Agincourt. This is the most one-sided victory. The Republicans ought to be ashamed. The Republicans ought to stand underneath the French flag and surrender to it. That's how bad it was. Yeah. Even the French are saying, you know, 75% tax increase or tax rate on the rich was unconstitutional and too much. But here in America, we're letting the French show us how not to be socialists. That's how bad it is. Kevin, this is the end.
This is the end of the Republican Party. This is the end of the Republican Party. The Republican Party is no more.
It may survive under the name, but certainly this leadership, this big tent fell in on them. You know, they built a really big tent and they had no center pole. They had no principles that held it up and it collapsed on them. And it's falling right on John Boehner, by the way.
Republican Party, RIP, I think that's the motto coming out of this particular decision made by the Republican-led Congress. Dave, leadership used to be where you would
pick leaders.
Lead. Yeah, you would lead. And I haven't seen Republicans lead in a long time.
Well, there's
maybe Reagan.
There is the guy out front who's leading. He's the guy with the white flag in his hand, waving it out in front of the others. That's a Republican leader.
That's Republican leadership.
The Republican Party, since its inception in Abraham Lincoln, has always been a party of centralized big government. Mm-hmm. They speak about distributed smaller government, but even in its founding, it was about a centralized, strong federal presence, not a strong distributed state presence.
And Dave, I mean, obviously our leaders are those who we choose, and our leaders are doing exactly what we want them to do because they are us. They are effectively us. They come out of us. They are elected by us, and they do what we would do. I'm saying maybe not you and I, but the vast majority of Americans. Americans have ultimately collapsed in terms of how they are going to leave a legacy for their children. Dave, a nation that killed 80 million children over the last 50, 60 years, why wouldn't they steal from their grandchildren? Why wouldn't they drive their grandchildren into debt and into bankruptcy? And that's where this nation is headed, Dave. I'd say the average congressman is 50 years of age. He's hoping that the nation will collapse after he dies in about 25 years. I think what is happening right now, the policies that they're laying out right now for this nation – in the area of deficit spending, in the area of increased socialist involvement in our lives. And by the way, if you're only cutting spending $15 billion and you're increasing taxes by $600 billion, friends, that's an increase in government. That's an increase in the size of government. That is certifying that government will control a huge proportion of our lives. Right now, it's about 60 to 65% of our lives on the local, state, and federal level. And we're moving towards a 70, 75% control that government has over every single aspect of our lives over the next number of years. So, Dave, I think we're looking at increased socialism, increased debt. They're not going to solve the debt problem here.
No, they don't want to solve the debt problem. Kevin, if there is an index that's important, it would be the selfishness index. I think in the history of mankind, we are at an all-time high. We don't care about our children or children's children. We say, you know, hey, kids, you're on your own. Figure it out.
You've killed 80 million of these babies. I mean, by government dollars, by the abort-efficient birth control pill, by the mandated insurance programs now that require the abort-efficient birth control pill or the abort-efficient day-after pill for people who are with child. So once you've killed 80 million children that, by the way, will not be there to provide a pretty healthy worker to retiree ratio in the year 2035, by the time you have killed all of these kids, why wouldn't you steal from them? I mean, if you were in government, why wouldn't you steal from them? Why wouldn't you say, who cares about what happens to our kids in 2040?
Because they don't care about their kids. They are the selfish index is at a peak right now.
Dave, at the point where your son and my son are going to be about 45 years of age, this nation will be bankrupt.
I'm not sure there will be a nation. The America, I think they'll be living in post-American America. Mm-hmm. The principles of our founding are all but dead. There's hardly a pulse left in the ideas and the principles of our founding. The Republican Party has been as important in the demise as anything else. They claim to be against abortion. What have they done?
Nothing.
They've done nothing. If you are serious about protecting the lives of 80 million children, you would think a judge would be impeached if that's the problem.
Yeah.
You would think that maybe it would be in all your campaign literature that you'd be speaking about it, but it doesn't matter to them. If you were the party of a balanced budget, you wouldn't have passed this continuing resolution. You would have shut down the government under the George Herbert Walker Bush administration when he said, read my lips, no new taxes.
He would have shut the government down.
Yeah, you would have said, only part of government that survives this year are the parts that are constitutionally mandated, because there's this thing called the 10th Amendment, and we're going to get back to being a legal constitutional government.
Dave, you're talking about leadership, and we haven't had leadership for a long, long time, many, many, many decades, unless you're talking about Democrats who are in total agreement with Marx and would love to see a total communist nation in this country where the government controls and owns every single aspect, every square inch of every single thing that we do. Okay, my friends, there is some good news, however. The Obama administration is stimulating a sector of the economy, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment on the Generations broadcast. Some good news next on Generations. Stay with me.
Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio program is a ministry of generations with vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org.
Back on the Generations broadcast, my name is Kevin Swanson. This is the Generations Radio program, and we try to bring a biblical perspective to things. And when it comes to biblical perspective, governments are allowed about 10% of the gross national income, and that's a maximum according to 1 Samuel chapter 8. Now, yeah, we bring a biblical principle to bear, and occasionally in a period of crisis, that ratio has gone to 20%. We see that under the administration of Joseph in the book of Genesis. However, if a government on a consistent basis goes above 10% of the gross national income, that is, they're taking and controlling more than 10% of the people's assets, of the people's income, friends, that's a tyranny as defined by 1 Samuel chapter 8. Okay, so just very, very simply, the Bible has something to say about that. And we can say that with confidence. We don't have to quote Karl Marx. We don't have to say it's all natural law. We don't have to appeal to history. We don't have to guess at this. We can say with confidence that inspired writings coming to us through the prophets and through God himself, 1 Samuel 8 limits government to 10% of the people's income. And if the governments continue to take more than that over a period of time, it's just plain old-fashioned stealing, and they're redistributing wealth. And by the way, they're doing it even more now than they ever have been, because the tax ratios are higher for the rich than the poor, and that has increased in the decision made by the vast majority of Republicans and Democrats in the Senate and the House in America. They have violated God's law again, because God's law says when it comes to public projects, the poor shall not pay less and the rich shall not pay more. That's very, very clear in Exodus chapter 30, and you can find it throughout the scriptures. The Bible says that civil government needs to treat both the poor and the rich equally. The Bible is not Marxist. And I know that's really hard for Christians to receive, because Christians aren't used to applying the Bible to, you know, like life and stuff. Okay. So, Dave, here's the good news. I know we've talked about some negative news, but some good news. My friend Chad was down at the gun show. He's been working the gun shows for about 5 years here in Colorado. He was at the Tanner Gun Show over the weekend, and he said that his sales, now he does different things down there. He kind of has his own little entrepreneurial thing going. And he says his sales at the gun show was about 100 times what it typically does. And that's because it was just packed to the gills. I mean, apparently, according to the story I read in the Denver Post, you could not even walk down the aisles. It was shoulder to shoulder. It was elbow to elbow trying to get to the guns. And this is the good news. Evidently, there is a sector of the economy that Obama has stimulated by some of his policies and his talks. And of course, what we're talking about is he has stimulated this economy because of what has happened in Connecticut. And he is pushing for gun control big time right now.
Right, he is. And Dianne Feinstein doesn't just want to take some guns. She wants to take all guns. They're talking about registering every private transfer. I mean, the shall not be abridged is
being
dismantled. It's already been abridged. It's being dismantled and completely ignored. So Americans realizing that when your firearms are taken away, the tyrants cannot be opposed by the people. They look at history. They see what happened in Germany. They see what happened in so many places where massacres of have occurred, where tyrants have taken over. The first thing they do is they remove the guns. So the people are buying guns in droves. If Dianne Feinstein keeps getting press coverage about how she wants to take every gun off the street, she wants to ban handguns and so forth, I think this sector of the economy will continue to flourish and grow until all of America is well-armed.
So let's give some credit where credit is due. I mean, they have stimulated the economy.
Exactly. If Obama had come off after the Connecticut shooting, after Sandy Hook, and said, you know, it's unfortunate that some people are irresponsible, but we are a nation of freedoms. And one of those freedoms that we hold very sacred is the right to keep and bear arms for the individual. And so, you know, we're just going to try and let this pass and have a little sorrow. The gun industry wouldn't have flourished.
But
in his genius.
His
genius. And knowing that there's a sluggish economy, he started talking about banning guns, about having to do something. Mm-hmm. He gave Joe Biden a special assignment.
Okay.
When you give Joe Biden a special assignment, you know, you're being serious.
That's big,
Because it's not every day that Joe Biden gets to do anything because, well, he's Joe Biden.
Yeah, and VP.
And you're hoping that there's no cameras or microphones around. But that just all got the ball rolling, and then you got Dianne Feinstein talking. Yeah. And then you have places that, like Obama's former cabinet member, who is now the mayor of Chicago. Chicago has some of the most draconian gun laws in the country.
And the highest murder rate in America.
They topped 500.
Yeah.
500 murders.
Over the year.
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, but that's okay. Next, there's a new year. We're in a new year.
So it's a new start.
I think we're looking at 650 this year.
650, yeah. Going for it. Yeah.
So people are saying where there isn't guns, where guns are banned, there's a lot of crime.
Yeah.
Because it turns out the criminals don't obey the gun laws.
Yeah.
That's what because
they're criminals.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
They're lawless. So, you know, it's doing a wonderful thing for the economy in certain sectors.
Yeah. And manufacturing is not dead in America. Apparently the gun manufacturing business is booming right now. And the ammo. My understanding is ammo is doing very, very well.
It's very important that the American arms manufacturers continue to prosper, because you wouldn't want those Eastern European CZs and stuff and the Tikhonovs, and they're just inferior weapons.
Dave, you know, seriously, I think they're going to have a hard time banning all guns in America. I read somewhere that Americans have more guns than every army in the entire world combined. I don't know how accurate that is, but, you know, you think of Russia probably has, you know, 20 million guys carrying guns in their armed forces. I think China has about 5 or 10 million in their armed forces, if I'm not mistaken, you know, maybe about 10 million. So you add that up and you're 30 million, and then on and on. But American hunters have like 300 million guns.
Not just
that's
the
a
hunters.
Lot of guns.
Not just the hunters.
I mean, not just the hunters. It's everybody practically. I don't know. 70-80% of Americans probably own guns. I don't know how high that number is. We got to talk to some of our friends from gun owners in America. I want to get them on the air here shortly. But the fact of the matter is, Americans are well armed, and Dave, it's going to be really, really difficult to ban all guns in America. It's going to be hard to collect all those guns. I mean, that's a lot of work. I mean, imagine coming to every single Texan, coming to their door and say, I'm here to collect your guns. That's a big job. I would not want that job.
You'd want to be wearing body armor.
I would not want that job. So just for the record, you know, Kevin Swanson is not going to take that job.
Yeah, in Texas, the little girl will shoot you for that.
Exactly. Imagine what it would take to confiscate every gun in America.
I can imagine them trying.
It's like imagine Red Dawn, you know, to the 100th power. You know, have you seen Red Dawn? You know, where these country boys are collecting their guns and fighting the North Koreans or whatever. I don't think it's possible, Dave. I mean, and here's the other thing: unless you were to confiscate 300 million guns, you're not gonna make any impact whatsoever on these school shootings. And these mass shootings.
It's not about making an impact. It's just using the school shootings as the opportunity to inflict more tyranny. I don't think they're going to get guns. I think they know they're not going to get guns. I think they're working for a tax on ammunition. That's my own personal feelings, is that they're trying to tax ammunition. They're trying to punish gun owners. They know they're not going to be able to take it away. The hypocrisy is astounding. When you see these Hollywood people come up there and do these little PSAs about banning guns. when they themselves have made millions of dollars shooting.
You know what's going to happen, though, if they try to tax ammo? Have you ever seen these reloading machines?
Yeah.
People are going to be reloading right and left.
What happens?
You have 100 million reloading machines in America.
You will have 100 million reloading machines, and you will create a black and a gray market thrive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Yeah.
It will thrive like crazy. You won't have less ammunition. You'll just have less legal ammunition.
And Dave, I mean, let's get back to what government really needs to be doing. And government is not out there. I mean, government is not created to be a terror to those who do good.
Are you sure? Because
that's the definition in Romans 13.
But our government, our president just signed a bill. There was no cameras. He did it in secret, where the government can continue eavesdropping on your phone calls and wiretapping and looking at your emails and doing electronic surveillance of you without a warrant.
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. I mean, Dave, I mean, as defined in Romans 13, governments are not instituted by God to be a terror to the good doers, but to the evil doers. And that has got to be defined by God's laws, friends. That passage is descriptive. That is, it describes what a civil magistrate is. And it is prescriptive. That is, it also defines what a civil magistrate should be. And so if a civil magistrate is not doing this, then he is over time eroding his right to be a civil magistrate. So the civil magistrate is supposed to go after the bad guys, the guys that do the kinds of things that happen in Connecticut. And by the way, that happened also out in Webster, New York area, where, remember, Dave, that ex-convict that set a car ablaze in his lakeside neighborhood to lure firefighters in the area, open fire. I think he killed two of them, seriously wounded two more before killing himself. And, Dave, as it turned out, he was the guy who in 1980 killed his 92-year-old grandmother with a hammer.
With a hammer?
With a hammer.
We need to register hammers. We need to have a 5-day waiting period for hammers.
First of all, okay, that's awful. I mean, is anybody with me on this, Dave? Are you with me on this? This Spangler guy, that's awful. He killed his 92-year-old grandmother with a hammer, Dave, and he got, 17 years in the slammer for that? Incredible. I mean, this guy. Okay, so the civil magistrate is out there, Dave, to tyrannize all these innocent people and register all their guns. But when a guy kills his 92-year-old grandmother with a hammer, what happens to him? Gets 17 years in the slammer, he's back killing people 17 years later? Dave, shame on the civil magistrate in New York. Shame on the civil... This is the fault of the civil magistrate. It's possible that there are some judges that need to hang because of this.
We believe in ultimate justice, that God will judge
the judges. God will judge those judges. But you know, I think maybe there ought to be a court in New York that calls these judges in, examines the evidence that they looked at, and determines whether or not these judges need to be held responsible for allowing this madman, this murderer, back onto the streets to kill these firefighters. See, now that's true justice. Now that's the kind of stuff that Barack Obama needs to be talking about.
Right. Well, we need to do is ban
tyrannizing,
criminals.
Not tyrannizing the innocent citizens that are trying to defend themselves from these idiots, but dealing with judges who are not willing to apply the law of God and keep these murderers off the streets because that's their job.
So you're talking about banning criminals rather than banning guns or hammers.
Exactly. Exactly. Criminals that kill people.
So
as this.
They should
as
be
madman
destroyed.
Webster, New York did. And by the way, I think he also killed his aunt, if I'm not mistaken. A police officer was injured. Spangler's sister, who lived with him in the home, still unaccounted for. Yeah, who knows where she is. I mean, I'm sure he was busy with the hammer.
Kevin, you heard...
After he got out of the slammer.
We never talked about this, but you read about the theater shooting in San Antonio, didn't you?
I don't remember. Oh, yeah, a while back.
No, it was in December.
Okay.
No, you probably didn't read about it because the news didn't report it.
Okay, I didn't hear
it. A guy
about
went into a theater. Uh-huh. He was going to do the Batman shooting thing. Uh-huh. Turns out somebody in San Antonio had a gun.
Oh, in the theater?
In the theater.
So that pretty much ended the whole thing.
It kind of ended the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There wasn't 17 dead. There wasn't 10 dead.
Yeah. But there was one.
The guy who walked into the theater trying to create mischief.
Was he dead?
He's dead.
He's dead.
He's dead.
So that guy's dead.
Right.
See, so, no, I didn't read about that.
Huh. Weird.
Okay. So, well, maybe there's a reason to have guns. And Dave, as you know, the solution is, at this point, I think the solution is to defend ourselves. And you know what, Dave? It is interesting that Jesus required his disciples to carry swords. Remember, he said, you know, go get a sword. In Luke 23 or 22, he says, go get a sword. And they came back with two. He says, that's enough. Now, if, let's say the sword control patrol showed up in the Garden of Gethsemane and arrested the disciples for carrying swords, okay? Do you think that would have been against God's law? Do you think that would have been an abridgment of justice or righteousness from the perspective of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords who commanded his disciples to carry swords?
Absolutely. And what we do is we'd look at the whole corpus of the Word of God. We would come upon a law that says, thou shalt not murder. And we understand as we continue to read the Word of God that thou shalt not murder means that we have to protect life, including our own.
Sure.
We could appeal to natural law, but that's another program. But Jesus clarifies that law about protecting your own life as he tells them to carry a sword. That the failure to protect your own life is akin to not saving the life or murder. You follow?
Yeah,
because
sure.
What's commanded, the opposite is forbidden.
Sure.
And what's forbidden, the opposite is commanded. You're commanded not to kill.
We have a responsibility to protect our own lives and the lives of others.
And the lives of others. Sure. How can you protect your family if you have no sword?
Right.
Jesus rebuked Peter for bringing the sword in the garden, not because it was a sword, but because he did not understand the cosmic reality in history of what was happening.
It is possible that some of you listening to this program are a little shocked at the fact that we're bringing a Bible into play and we're talking about what the Bible has to say about what's going on in the news today. Well, I know that's very odd because most churches and most Christians don't use the Bible for anything besides maybe getting saved, whatever that means. And so what we do is we bring God's law to bear. We bring God's word to bear. And we say, hey, you know, it's better than whatever the humanists are doing. And the humanists are messing up the social situation. They're messing up the state. They're messing up the future, the economy, et cetera, et cetera. They're pretty much doing everything you possibly do to destroy a socioeconomic and a political system. Okay, that's what humanists do. They do it through communism, through socialism, through Marxism, and all the other isms. But what we're saying is the Bible has some really good things to say about reconstructing entire social systems. And that's what I bring out in my book, The Second Mayflower, and a little book for children called What Does the Bible Say About That? Those resources are available at our website, kevinswanson.com or generationswithvision.com. You can interact with the program, friends, by calling into our radio show, 877-520-9510. That's a toll-free number if you'd like to interact with some of the things we say on this radio program. It's 877-520-9510. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.